Hello and welcome to show 36 of the Retro Computing Roundtable, recorded Sunday, October 14th. But no matter where I go, there's one thing I like to know. Will I ever find my way back to Oz? The RCR is hosted by Cyber Ears. They can host your podcast too and audio files. So go to cyberears.com for more details. I'm David, and I'm hosting today, plus Carrington and Earl are here, too, of course. And how are you today, Carrington?
I am swell, but I'm hoping the swelling goes down.
Earl, how are you doing today?
I'm doing super fantastic, but I'll get better.
Excellent.
Better and than super fantastic? That's not enough.
And for all of our live viewers at home on YouTube, hello and welcome. And you'll notice that we've all made some additions to our sets. Is that what I'll call it? But so I have my beloved Apple Lisa behind me, and Earl's got his Commodore PET, and Carrington has his. I know it's an arcade. What's it called, Carrington?
It's a little MAME machine. Yeah.
MAME arcade machine. Mm-hmm. So cool. We're spiffing up the joint. So anyway, I'm going to move right into the show then. So some of our items of interest and news, and we're going to start off with you, Carrington. The CD player turns 30.
It has. I guess it's the nature of doing a retro computing or vintage computing podcast that we're frequently going to have, you know, something turns some round number shows. Okay. So we've been doing it a lot lately for various hardware things. And this is instead for a type of media, but I thought it was worth bringing up. So the CD itself as an idea, and the first machine came out 30 years ago in October, so we've hit the 30-year mark. And it got me thinking about what a massive impact the CD, and particularly the CD-ROM, had on computers. It became the de facto storage idea, CD-ROMs, CDRs, that sort of stuff, and the various later incarnations of it. That size has stuck around in things like Blu-ray and that kind of stuff, and there was DVD RAM, and there were so many things. And it's funny what a massive leap in storage it represented at the time, like when we were coming off of things like floppies and hard drives, of course, but the idea of your portable media being floppies, 3.5-inch floppy disks. So CDs were, you know, huge storage, very slow at first, of course, but a massive amount of storage. And it's funny now that nowadays, instead of talking about CDs and they represent X number of hundreds or thousands of floppies, we instead talk about other media representing X number of hundreds or thousands or even tens of thousands of CDs. So we've definitely moved on, but it's something to be noted, like the massive impact that CDs had on vintage computing and really to this day still have on. It's rare to buy a computer that doesn't have a CD. We're at the tail end of that, I think, it being a default medium. But it was huge and had a massive impact on vintage computers. So happy birthday, CD.
And Carrington, do you recall, I mean, when the CDs first came out, like any technology, they were very elite.
Mm-hmm. And expensive.
Pretty darn expensive. And then, again, like the typical technology curve, then that flattened out after a while. So with them coming out 30 years ago, how long after the introduction do you think it took for them to really go mainstream? Because I'm remembering
like four or
it happened
5 years.
Yeah, it happened pretty fast.
Yeah, I think the CD itself came out, but as an audio thing, in 81. But I don't think I had a CD-ROM player for, I guess my first one would have been the Mac CD, the CD300, I think, was the first one I had. And I think that was 85, 86, something like that. By the end of the 80s, they were everywhere. So it's one of those things where 81 they came out, and in 89, everybody had them, and they were attached to basically every computer. So that's sort of your range. So it's somewhere in the midpoint there. But I don't think by 83 they were out that much. So at least it took a few years, I think so.
So even if you give it 5 years, that's still a 25-year run with this being such a dominant media.
It's still technically dominant, although I do think we're at the cusp of that. You got mm-hmm. things like the MacBook Air and netbooks. Oh, netbooks, remember those. And they're coming out more and more. I find, like, my primary work computer is same as the computer I'm on right now, which is a 15-inch MacBook Pro. And in both of those computers, I've removed the CD-ROM, the DVD-ROM drive and put in another hard drive. So I found that they were so not useful, I prefer to have a second drive in the computer rather than even have access to a CD-ROM player. So I've started right. not using them even in my desktops and the larger laptops.
I was just at work this past week, and a woman who's about to leave the company, and so she's trying to get all her files together, you know, for coworkers, and she's having a problem with something on like our FTP site or something. So she was considering burning the CD, but she found another way. So she used Dropbox and some other stuff, sort of external to the company, because this whole CD thing's just not very convenient or really as efficient nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, big files and all. And I was about to say something before, but I was on mute. If you saw me talking. Yeah, do you remember? I worked at a CompUSA, I think it was like 95 to 97, somewhere in there. And I remember, you know, that's when like CD players, the whole multimedia in the PC world came on really strong. And you'd have like entire sections where you could choose different sound cards and multimedia players. You kind of had that whole, remember you buy the big kits where you got the speakers, the CD player, and the sound card, mm-hmm. you know, where everybody could add it into their PC to make
and
it
they
out.
All they all integrated. I mean, those were some of the proprietary CD-ROMs yeah. that would connect up to a Sound Blaster or something.
Right, right, yeah. So, so it made a huge impact, you know, in the computer market. At first glance, when I saw, because I saw Benj's article here that you're talking about, Carrington, you know, my first instinct's like, you know, CD player, you know, and then computers, but of course, they made a huge impact on computers, but and on, you know, music, obviously, too. So I remember I didn't get my first CD player until like sometime in the mid-90s. I was kind of late, as far as on music-wise, I mean.
Really?
Yeah, I was kind of late. Yeah, had a cassette. You had a big investment in cassettes. And I remember my best friend got his like in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, so he paid some good money for that thing. And
And my first CD player for audio was a home one. It wasn't mine. It was like my family had one at home. Mm-hmm. So I bought CDs that were my own, but I didn't own my own CD-ROM or CD player for audio even for I think at least a year or two after that I finally got one like for my little computer room in the basement.
Either of you guys remember your first audio CD?
Unfortunately, embarrassingly, yes.
What was it?
It was, if I recall, it was a Christa Berg CD.
Oh.
I think it was
Lady in Red.
No, it was before that. I think it was Spanish Train. So something like that. I was big into that kind of stuff, man. Like I was all about the storytelling and arena rock and like Styx and Christa Berg and Rush and like just man, it's embarrassing, really. That was all the music of my youth.
I don't remember. I don't remember mine at all. I want to think it's something. I'm thinking it's maybe either Electric Light Orchestra or Pink Floyd.
You were cooler than me, is what you're saying. I'm okay with that.
But it could have been the Police or some of that kind of stuff.
Still cooler than me.
Earl, you remember yours?
I can't remember. I mean, I would have said Beatles, but I'm thinking that there's a chance the Beatles hadn't even been pressed to CD when I got my first CD. I'm trying to remember when that happened, like when the Blue Album came out and the Red Album came out on CD, those compilation albums.
Mm-hmm. Might have Can been I change my answer? You guys are too cool. I mean, it was punk music. Totally.
Yeah.
It was completely punk. You wouldn't have heard of it.
Right, right. Independent label. All right, we're going to move along. And I had mentioned about we all have things behind us now. So make sure anybody, our audio listeners, take a peek over on the YouTube site, you know, later on then, because it'll be there. And you know, look at a little bit of the video and look at us and our stuff behind us. All right, so moving along. Earl, you take it. So Bell Labs has a tribute to Dennis Ritchie on YouTube.
Well, so as we mentioned on the show a while back, Dennis Ritchie had unfortunately passed away. And last month, Bell Labs did a tribute to him. And during that tribute, they recorded a number of the speakers that they had at the tribute presentation, and they have kindly placed those videos up on YouTube. There are folks like Brian Kernahan up there and Eric Schmidt and others, and I thought it was really interesting to watch some of the material, and so I put a link to this YouTube playlist in the show notes, and you can get to it from there. It's a lot of material, hours worth of viewing and interesting backstories and you know, again, a tribute to a person who was influential in the computer industry in unspeakable ways.
Unspeakable?
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Well, you can speak about it.
You are not to speak of it again.
Yeah, that's right. It's, yeah. We don't talk.
I had that unspeakable book about C that he wrote.
C and Unix and stuff like that. We try and...
I think the way that other people do their curly braces is unspeakable. But that's only because I do them correctly.
You're not a trailing indent kind of guy, are you?
Shut up.
So moving right along.
That. No, I'm not actually.
I want to highlight a new Kickstarter campaign. It's for the P112 single board computer kit, and I want to thank everyone who Carrington and Earl, because I was trying to come up with a good list of all the different kit computers and retro kits and all that kind of stuff, like Vince Briel's stuff, but also this sort of thing too. And he had actually, David Griffith had contacted me about, he was about to do this, a Kickstarter campaign. Have either of you guys heard of this particular project before? It's a single board computer running the Z180 microprocessor, so it can run CPM, DOS Plus, ZS-DOS. He has an $8,000 goal 1 month. As of this moment, he has two backers. So basically, you get in at the $100 level. And with that, you get a P112 board with surface mount parts soldered on, a boot ROM chip and serial port pigtails, shipping anywhere in the U.S., but you'll need to source the rest of the parts, which he says is very easy. You add a serial terminal, floppy drives, power supply, and chassis, and you're all set.
So I think the last time that they did a run of these, they were extremely popular, like many of the kit computers, and people have been wanting to see another run. So I actually think this Kickstarter will make it.
I hope so. My first instinct, though, was to say that, $8,000 goal at $100 a pop, he's got to get 80 people to pre-buy one.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no idea whether that's, ridiculous or easy, or I guess we'll find out.
Although, again, like we've talked about before, the nice part of doing it in a Kickstarter format is you can assess the demand. And if there's not enough demand to make it worth it, there's no harm done. People
right.
don't spend the money. I mean, it's not like you have to chip in before you find out if you're actually going to get it.
I wonder if he had to try to do, that many as a minimum. Because,
well, he says in the description that the goal is to get 150 kits as an order. Okay. But I think he's just set the minimum below that. That's probably the minimum he needs to be able to place an order at all.
Factor,
yeah, but
the,
I think the hope
stuff.
Is to get 150.
So I think, we'll tweet about it and maybe mention it again. Help him out. Let's get it. Help him get them sold. I would consider buying one, but I've got some other financial obligations coming up soon, so I'm not sure. But anyway, go check that out. So the next one up is, it's Carrington. You got the next.
Oh, yeah. Bring it back to me, baby. You guys
Retro City Rampage.
What a shocker. Literally. I want to talk about a game. What a shocker. So I think we talked about Retro City Rampage on an earlier episode. But it has finally come out. So it was just released a couple of days ago. And what it is a NES-style retro game, but it's a modern game, although you can get it at the good old game site, GOG.com. Mm-hmm. And I should give a shout-out to them as well. I love the good old game site. It's basically like Steam for older games. So it's a fantastic place to purchase games. I find myself constantly buying games there because they have sales all the time.
Now, this and usually DRM-free. Right?
It is. Yeah, well, it is. And the big advantage to me, I think, is they make sure the games work on relatively modern operating systems. It's very Windows-centric, so Mac, like guy like me, it's a little less convenient, but it's very easy to run Windows XP to 7 on a Mac. So I run a dual boot into Windows 7 for this kind of stuff. And there's a massive collection of vintage games available for purchase. And since it's like a Steam thing, you can buy the game, you can download it multiple times. It keeps track of what games you have. It keeps track of what games get updated. So you can when you go on the site, they'll say, hey, this game has some new features or new update or something new that's been added for it. One of the nice things about good old games is they have sales all the time, huge sales. So while this game just came out, so it's $15, which is pretty much the highest I've seen anything on Good Old Games. It's always the case that everything goes on sale on Good Old Games, and they often do things where they'll have, you know, all recently, for instance, they had all the Dungeons & Dragons games for sale. There's 15 of them or something like that, and some of them amazing games. And it was something like, you know, it's $5 a game, but if you buy at least 8 of them, then it's $4 a game. If you want to buy all of them, then it's like $2 a game. It's, you know, crazy discounts on things. Mm-hmm. So I frequently go there. It's a great Twitter thing to follow because they announce their specials every week, so you can see sort of what's on sale. So anyway, Retro City Rampage is a game I've been looking forward to. It looks really, really fun. What I like about it is it's kind of like, think of it as Grand Theft Auto, but for Nintendo. So it's Nintendo-style graphics, really old, the smaller 8-bit graphics, really, really fun, though, really fast-moving. And you play essentially a bad guy going on a rampage in this city. It has lots of throwbacks to vintage video games, and you'll see some actual characters and some sort of riffs on classic characters in it. Really, really fun game. Highly recommended. If you like this sort of thing, then here's a great reason to get a free Good Old Games account. So you can log on either to purchase it now. Like I said, it's $15, and I think it's well worth the $15. But almost certainly, you'll be able to get it for far less than that before Christmas, because that's just what Good Old Games does, is it releases things on sale all the time. So, just came out. I'm really excited about it. I've purchased it. Really looking forward to playing more of it. Highly, highly recommended. We'll have a link in the show notes.
It looks fun. It looks like it has one of these screenshots that's sort of, maybe it's hinting at Paperboy a little bit.
Well, it kind of does all those. Like, there's tons and the crazy. It's an open world game. So, like the GTA games where you can go. One of the big advantages of a modern game with this style versus doing it on an actual, like, say, NES cart, is you have so much more access to RAM and that kind of stuff. So you can have these massive, massive wandering open world game levels. And there's lots of level. There's underwater levels and cityscapes and paperboy things and Space Invader type things, like just tons of stuff. So if you're a fan of vintage games, you'll feel very at home in the various areas and levels. And it's very, very funny gameplay where you get to jump on things and steal coins off people and stuff. Really, really, I can't recommend it enough. It's a fantastic execution of a really good idea.
Cool.
Yeah.
There's another screenshot where the guy's saying, you now have the Flax Combobulator.
Yep. And there's some on the Good Old Games site, which we'll have a link over to the page. They made some commercials for it, a really funny breakfast cereal commercial, and then a trailer for the game, both of them on YouTube, so both worth checking out. You can find them on the Good Old Games page for this game.
Excelente. So, Earl, you take it. This is another sort of retro kit-related device here, the Low-Tech XT-CF-V2.
It is. And I'm wondering, actually, if you could skip to the next thing and come back to me, because suddenly I've got a terrible cough.
Sure. Yeah. No
You're
problem.
Off the show.
The next thing is... Use the cough button. All right. So the next one is I reported on that the Apple One failed to sell at the recent Christie's auction, which, frankly, I was kind of surprised. Was anyone else? You almost kind of expected to always sell, don't you? But with a minimum bid.
But I guess the prices have gotten outrageous, right? So,
yeah.
But I honestly, it didn't even cross my mind that this wouldn't sell, even for the crazy price they were talking about. I guess I too have been swept up on the whole, you know, thing. Oh my gosh, these always sell and they sell for crazy money.
Well, the minimum bid would have been was £50,000, which is about $80,000 US. So yeah, even with the crazy other auctions, you kind of think, it's going to at least get $80,000, right?
It's only $80,000.
It's got to be a limited number of people, though, that can step up and spend this kind of money on this.
Yes, exactly.
And a few of them have sold over the last few years, if you look at at the list on eBay and at other auctions. So maybe, I mean, the market for these kind of things has got to be small. Not a lot of people want to chuck $50,000 for an essentially non-functional, very basic computer that's really more of a museum piece, unless, I guess, it's museums purchasing it. So maybe the market's just dried up.
Yeah. So, of course, it'll be very interesting to not only see how an Apple One does next time, both on a high-profile auction like at Christie's or Sotheby's or on eBay. And if you go to my article, I put a little list together about how much the last one sold in the high-profile ones and then on the eBay auction. So the very last one that sold in June of this year at Sotheby's was $374,000, which is ridiculous. The last one on eBay was $75,000, which is bargain basement compared to the...
Well, you think about it, the guy who bought the last one at Christie's should have hung out and could have picked up this one for...
Yeah.
Grand.
So if you get a chance, go over to my, there's a link in the show notes, go over to my page where I did a little report on it, a report article. I can't wait to get my grade back. But also I link off to Mike Willigal's site, who's got an excellent resource to Apple One Registry where I pulled a lot of this information. So check that out.
Speaking of him, we should mention that his Mimio kits have gone back on sale.
Yeah,
look at
tie-in.
Me segueing over to another item on our list. So, Mike Willigal, of course, we talked about the various Apple One kits and knockoffs and that kind of stuff in our last episode, and we were specifically mentioning the Mimio One. Well, the Mimio One has gone back on sale, so you can actually pick up one now. It's a heck of a lot cheaper than even the starting bid on that Christie's auction. So if you're looking for something that is functionally identical to an Apple One and looks pretty much identical. I mean, I can only tell the difference when you look really closely. You can pick up one of Mike's kits. What does the Mimio One go for at the moment? Like, what's the asking price on these things?
So I was just looking at that because I'd like to get one. Mm-hmm. The bare Mimio motherboard PCB only $150 plus shipping. $20 bucks in the U.S., $35 outside. But then you get
the various extra add-on bits, right? Like,
yeah.
that's just the PCB, basically.
Right. Yeah, I wonder if he's considering a Kickstarter. That'd be kind of nice if he could, maybe he got enough interest, enough upfront money, he could put together, like, whole kits, you know, like, here's everything you need.
Well, you can, kind of. I mean, I think that's how he sells it, because you can purchase just the PCB, or he's got the list, you can get the various items to get the keyboard cap adapter and that kind of stuff and put together your own kit. I think the hold up on here was he was waiting for the PCBs to come in so he could test them and make sure they're all good. So he now has them all, they're all in stock. I think historically these have always sold out. So if you're interested in one, I think you should jump now and pick one up. So Dave, you're thinking of getting one?
I'd like to. I don't really have the funds at the moment, but you know, I have a replica one. But you know, I think it's you know what? So here's back to some discussions we've had. In my case, so believe it or not, I wouldn't mind buying one. Frankly, mostly as a, I guess I'd call it an art piece.
Right.
Put it together, make a reproduction Apple One, and I would probably frame it and put it on the wall.
I think as well, and honestly, I'm a huge fan of Vince Briel, both as a guy, because he's awesome, and I love the stuff he makes. But at the end of the day, I think I would rather have one of these. If I'm going to shell out some money, it's not that this is that much more expensive than picking up a replica one, and this one looks exactly like an Apple One. Like, you're getting an actual Apple One. So even once you add in all the little bits and you're going to spend another $50 or $100 over doing the same thing as a replica one, I would rather own this. And I do think it's something more interesting. If I was going to display it, certainly I would prefer this look.
Yeah. How about you, Earl?
I don't know if it was a Mimio One, but one of the folks up at the Seattle group had a Apple One replica. I mean, a real replica, like a board level replica, that he'd actually gone out and researched and got a lot of the original chips for. And yeah, it's just a completely different feel than something like the replica one, which is a work alike, but not a look alike. So I guess the thing is, this Mimio One, you're saying it's $150, but that's just for the board, and then you've got to source all the components. Is that correct?
Yeah, from a company called Unicorn, going back down to it, Unicorn Electronics. Yeah, so which maybe isn't such a big deal.
Well, it adds more cost. I'm just thinking if what you want, it just depends on what you want. If you want a work-alike, then the replica one you buy for, I don't remember, what was it, $99 or $100?
No, it's $219 now. So Lizard Boy just saying that on the forum or the chats or whatever.
Speaking of the chats, I want to send a shout out to Eric, who said that what did he say that the Earl's go to statement that's going on in the background is going to blow that pet up. Totally awesome. We're all waiting. It's a ticking time bomb behind you, Earl.
No, you know, yeah, I've overclocked it. So,
could you adjust a video on that and get it like, you know, to stop? I'm just kidding.
No, see, a replica one kit for $149, and that includes everything you need to build it.
Because there's a sale on it. Isn't the sale, the I Can't Solder sale, still going on with Vince Briel?
I thought that was over.
Okay, maybe it's over. So it's then, I guess, because I think the normal price is $200 for a fully done everything for you kit and $150 bucks for just the kit that you solder yourself. And when he does the I Can't Solder sale.
When you're talking about the Mimio, that's $150 just for the board. And then you got to get all the parts. So that's probably double the price.
And I'm sorry, I had Lizard Boy had quoted about the 8800 micro, which is 219 now. So I missed that.
Right. It definitely is the case that the Mimio one is more expensive. Just to me, I think it's not like the replica one is $10 and the Mimio's $500. They're both, you know, a chunk of change. Like they're both, right, you're going to be spending. And I think to me, I'd rather save up and spend the extra money, even if it's going to cost another $100, $150 or whatever. And I think I would prefer to get one that was exact. If I'm going to get an Apple One, get one that's exactly as close to a real Apple One as possible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think I'm though. That said, I'm not in the market for either of them. So
the last thing I want to say on it, and I was trying to see if I could find it on eBay, but because I've emailed with Mike Willico a few times, and so there was someone that essentially sold one of his Mimio One, so an Apple One replica reproduction, and it sold for like $3,000 on eBay. Do you guys remember that? Maybe we even spoke of it.
Yeah, but, we did. That was last time. That was the Newton one, wasn't it?
Yeah. Which is still one of, I think, his board with maybe some other stuff done to it. Mm-hmm. But still, so people are paying, you know, you don't got to pay anywhere near that to source the parts.
Well, the difference is you get it all done. So with the Mimio one, you're having to put it together.
And I thought not only was it all done, but it shipped in a box that looked like the original Apple One box with replica documentation.
Yeah, all of that.
Yeah.
I mean, you could pretend
still
you went back to...
hard to justify that price, though. That's expensive for that Newton one.
Right. Off the top of my head, I'm thinking it's, you know, eight times, though, to have someone else put it together and put in a box and all that other stuff.
I could hire, like, a minion to go and make a box for me. And
really?
Like, totally. I love minions. They're so useful. I love minions.
I'm kind of thinking along the same lines as you, though, Carrington. I'm not in the market for one of these either, but in any case, if I was, I think it would be fun to buy it and build it yourself, whether it was the replica one or the Mimio.
Yep. Lizard Boy just said the same thing in the chat room, that if you buy the real kit, build it yourself. You know, they're designed to be easy to build. And we found that out at Kansas Fest. Like, a lot of people built, you know, kits and the various Vince Briel things. Everything he makes, even the more advanced ones, he really does have good instructions. It's really laid out so that, you know, even if it's your first time building something, you can solder it together and it'll work. Like, he makes fantastic kits.
Mm-hmm. So, Earl, take it away about the, going back to the page, the XT CF V2.
Okay. Well, I mean, we've talked about this on other platforms, like with the Apple II and the 2GS, you've got that CFFA 3000. And with Commodore, you've got a couple different options for running off of an SD card. And it's just the case that we talked, what was it, last show or the show before, about how floppies are kind of going the way of the dodo. I mean, the media itself is eventually, even if you can keep the drives aligned, eventually you're not going to have anything to put in the drives anymore. So different people have been coming up with what's the solution for, and now hard drives even, you're talking, they're going to be crashing. I've got my XT and my XT clone over here. One has a 15 megabyte RODIME drive in it. When I turn it on, it sounds like a jet spinning up on the tarmac. Mm-hmm. And in the other one, I've got a Western Digital hard card, which were real convenient because you just plug them in a slot and they go. But I think that vertically mounted hard card kind of technology maybe wasn't as resilient, so I don't know how long it's going to last. So bottom line is, you got to find some way to keep the machines going. The electronics you can kind of nurse-made along, but the physical devices like the floppies and the hard drives, they're going to go. So this is yet another solution, this XT board that will work all the way back into a 5150, the original IBM PC, and gives you the capability to use a compact flash card as your hard drive. So I think it's a beautiful solution. That in this particular case, the person, and we'll have a link up to their site, they engineered it for speed. So they tried to be the fastest mass storage device on the planet, if I'm reading it right, for one of the old PC XT models. And it's meant for the old 8-bitters. And I actually am in the market for something like this. The site mentions that there will be boards available for you to build yourself, or they're going to do a run of beta boards that will be all pre-assembled. And then if that works out well, I was reading the site, it looks like they're going to do another run. They'd like to do another run of like 800 of these boards. No, yeah. Not 800, 100.
Right, right.
800.
He's organizing a batch of about 20 assembled boards
for
public beta over the next few weeks.
Yeah, after that, after he gets the feedback, says, depending, hopefully, things will move on to a run of about 100 boards. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's been interesting about all of these things is when the projects come out, you pretty much have to jump on them or you lose, mm-hmm. right? I guess there's still some CFFA boards available for the Apple fans, but that's kind of a rare situation. I mean, usually they make those runs and then boom, those boards are gone. And if you want one, then you're looking at eBay or premium prices.
Though surprisingly, the latest round of CFFA cards has not sold out. They've lifted the limit on how many you can purchase, so you're allowed to just go in and snag a bunch if you want, and they're still available even this long after this latest round was released, which is pretty rare, I think.
That's what I was noticing, and that's kind of a nice thing. I hope that it's not a bad thing for Rich on his run of boards. But...
Oh, I'm sure they're going to sell, definitely. Hmm. And the nice thing on the Apple, like another solution is ADT Pro, which lets you just use a serial cable to connect from your modern computer to the bare metal directly on a serial port on an Apple II, and you can boot that way, or you can send things over, and so it lets you bypass the drives completely if you want.
And this new feature of ADT Pro that I still haven't tried. Doggone it. You guys hold me to this. I'm going to try this later today. I'm going to try this. You guys haven't tried it, right?
No.
Because this new feature of ADT Pro that allows you to use ADT Pro like a hard drive with ProDOS, that's just so exciting. And, I mean, ADT Pro goes so fast, mm-hmm. 115 kilobaud, that goodness. I mean, that ought to operate really well. So
I've been dying to get to try that again. Ages and ages ago, like literally years ago, when I was first doing 1 megahertz, I had ADT Pro and my 2E, and I tried to get them to talk to each other, and I couldn't get it to work. And I remember the developer, whose name is escaping me at the moment, even emailed me to say, hey, you know, what trouble are you having and stuff, and I think I didn't even get back to him, and I never even got it to work. And everybody else gets it to work, and all I hear are glowing raves about this software. So I have to try it again, the latest version, and I just want to be aware of what features it has and that kind of stuff. So I'm dying to check it out.
Shout out to ADT Pro. This really is the best thing since sliced bread for an Apple II. So I agree. And, you know, part of what, I mean, you could have a cabling sort of situation. I mean, you got to make sure you got the null modem cable, and works best, if I recall right, with a super serial card. So, or, well, I guess that would depend on which model of Apple you're running. Maybe, does the 2GS have built-in serial?
Yes.
Oh, it has the super same sort of connections like the older, like the SEs and stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's got the two serial ports, one labeled printer and one labeled modem. So it's got the two built-in serial ports.
Right, mini DIN 8, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Well, which is the best style of DIN 8, I don't know.
I'm going to move us along, and we are an audio podcast, so we realize this are audio-only listeners, so we try to keep that in mind. But
listeners are the ones who watch us live and join in the chat room.
Yeah, it's cool, because then we can interact with you, but we try to keep it in mind to keep it, keep this where it's totally entertaining and good for audio-only listeners. But having said that, I want to show everybody something on video.
I better switch back to the window. Hang on.
Maybe you'll go check it out, on YouTube. But this really is the future, this sort of hybrid solution with you're trying to use the older hardware. So this is, my Lisa 2. It's real. This is my real profile. But the Seagate hard drive in here, this will power on. It'll spin up the hard drive. But I can't give it to work, the Seagate hard drive anymore. But you see, it's running the Lisa operating system, but actually it's running it off of this. So this is a flash drive for my Lisa.
Nice.
And you can buy these from Vintage Micros. And Lisa's one of my favorite vintage machines. And so you can contact John Woodall, and he sells these. And, I guess they come pre-built. Yeah, I didn't have to build it, so I'm trying to get back to my picture, my screen here. Whoops. So anyway, there's solutions for all kinds of machines, and I'm putting together a list to do an article about all these different solutions and kit computers and so on.
Oh, cool. Well,
this is like a dream for me because I'm running a Lisa operating system, but I can run MacWorks Plus and boot the Mac operating system, just like my real first Mac, Lisa, is what I owned originally.
how do you select what media or what image or whatever that you're booting from?
Different card.
Ah, okay. Just slap in another flash card and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the Lisa comes up and it comes up and with a little menu over here, do you want to boot from floppy disk or hard drive? Picture of the profile, and I tell it hard drive. So as far as it's concerned, this is a profile hard drive. So it's pretty neat. So, but you know, anytime all of us we're using the real machines and we're using this sort of solution, it still gives you that feel of using the real thing.
Not that it
can't be fun emulation and everything else too.
It does indeed. I mean, I did so much work back in the day on the PCXT. If the hard drive dies and, I guess you just go out and get another hard drive, but that's a pain. You know they're all going to die eventually. So thank goodness for people like this, who go out.
These Seagate hard drives, people are selling these untested on eBay for like $200 and $300.
What model is it?
Off the top of my head, I want to say it's a ST225. I could be wrong.
So a 20 meg?
Does that sound right? Yeah.
That's meg MFM.
10.
Oh, okay.
These came in either 5 or 10.
What was that? I can't remember that moment.
I could have that number wrong. It's a 200-something, I think. So, Carrington, take it away. The last topic is that Ken Gagne is stepping down from the Kansas Fest Committee. And that is that's shocking to me, anyway.
Yeah, what is up with that?
Well, Ken's lazy.
I've always thought that about Ken.
The guy who does everything.
Kansas Fest and Open Apple.
Everybody wanted him out anyway.
He was stepping down. He was kicked out. Yes, he announced on the latest Open Apple that he'll be stepping down from the Kansas Fest committee for next year. And I think it was a smart choice. Like Ken had that thing on his own site, Apple 2 Bits, a while ago, where he had the survey about what do people think he should focus his time on? Because he does so much for the Apple II community. It's crazy. It's crazy what that guy does. Between Juiced GS and the various websites and the podcast, so much stuff. So, and I think even on that survey, what came last was Kansas Fest. And it's not that Kansas Fest isn't loved. It's just that, people from all around the world can answer the survey. So a lot of people answering just would never go to Kansas Fest. And also Kansas Fest has a whole committee. There's other people that will ensure it keeps going. And I guess with Steven joining the board and stuff like that last year, they can sort of shoulder the extra work. So Kansas Fest should still be able to continue. And it frees up Ken to work on some other things. So it totally makes sense. As he was saying, he's trying to just get some work-life balance. So I wanted to bring it up, not to focus on the fact that he's not going to be part of the committee anymore, but sort of more to publicly give him a shout-out for all the years of work he did put into having it run. I remember the first time I went to Kansas Fest, he's one of the guys that I had heard about ahead of time, and it was amazing like how much effort you could see even during the show that a few key people put in, and Ken was always one of those people where you see him running around, and it's sort of like you go to a party and the rest of us just get to hang out and have fun at the party, but there's somebody running around and keeping the glasses stocked and cleaning everything up and arranged it all, and Ken was one of those guys for Kansas Fest. So it's I just appreciate his Kansas Fest has become one of those things that is a highlight of my year, and I've been a few times now. I can't wait to go back, and Ken and his efforts were a big part of why I get to have that in my life. So it's something that I personally really appreciated, so I wanted to sort of thank him publicly and say, he did such great work and he'll be missed. I'm glad Kansas Fest is going to continue, that there's still all these amazing people that put all that effort in and keep it running. And I'm hoping that Ken not doing that frees up his time to do even more stuff with Juiced GS and with all the other stuff he does in the community. So he's one of those forces for good for Apple II. So it's hard to overstate how much he does for the rest of us. So I just really appreciated it. So I just want to say thanks.
And I haven't had a chance to listen to the new Open Apple yet. So does he say something along the lines like he makes it clear he's still going to Kansas Fest?
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, Ken does so many things. It was funny. We were talking about this before the show. I was putting a link in to say, okay, Ken's announced this, and what should I link to? And when it comes to a guy like Ken, there's so many choices of things you could link to. Do you link to Juiced GS? Do you link to his personal sites, multiple ones? Do you link to the podcast? How do you even choose what to link to? Which really says, I mean, there's an example of a guy doing a lot of stuff because it's hard to even figure out how to link to him. He does so much.
He's a giver.
He is, yeah, absolutely. Definitively, he is a giver. So. So yeah, so he'll be missed. I'm glad the show, I'm glad the podcast is still going. The Cannes Fest is still going, and I bet you he'll have even more fun now just attending, if he can just sort of go and just be an attendee like the rest of us. I bet you next year may be the most fun Cannes Fest for Ken in years. So
yeah. All right.
Crazy Eddie's going computer crazy with an incredible selection of home computers and computer software. Atari, Texas Instruments, Commodore, Xerox. Crazy Eddie's got them all at the guaranteed lowest prices. Shop around, get the best prices you can find on computers, then go to Crazy Eddie and he'll beat them. Crazy Eddie's going computer crazy. Now's the time to get the home computer you've always wanted. Crazy Eddie, his computer prices are insane.
If you're looking for a home computer, go to see Crazy Eddie now, because Crazy Eddie's greatest computer sale ever is on right now with prices that are insane.
Excuse me.
Oh, what?
Why so many computer add-ons?
I need to accomplish a lot, so I need a computer that will do a lot.
The new Compact Desk Pro has those add-ons built in.
I need lots of programs.
Desk Pro runs thousands of business programs.
I need speed.
Desk Pro's 2 to 3 times faster than you.
I need storage.
Inside the Desk Pro, capacity equal to 30 diskettes.
I need a vacation.
The new Compact Desk Pro. It simply works better.
I need my desk back.
Well, we are going to move into the next segment of the show, which is the retro computing gifts. And so since I'm hosting this time, I got to choose it. I kind of stumbled on this and looking for my eBay auction. So I remember these came on kind of big, I guess a couple years or within the time frame of the original iMacs, you know, launching. And do you guys remember too how a lot of products all of a sudden were very influenced by the colors and the translucence aspects of the iMac and all? Mm-hmm. But basically, this is just a little computer radio toy. I think it's, and it could be different from some of the other ones I'd seen a few years ago that were like clock radios. It sort of looks like it is, but it just looks like a little purple iMac computer radio toy is what it says. So that's kind of fun. I mean, there's two of them on eBay right now for $13.25 and $8.50 shipping. So that's cheap. You know what? It's being sold from Newport Richey, Florida. Because James and John from the Retro Maccast are from that area. I wonder if one of them is selling it. I don't know. But in any case, it's kind of neat. So that was the... So you may not be able to get those very long, but that was my retro computing gift idea.
I like it. It's hard to imagine how big that is, but I kind of see it maybe being, like 4-3 inches on the side or something like that. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, it looks like it's a little tiny little iMac.
Nice little conversation piece.
Mm-hmm.
So next,
I think what you should do, David, is get one and hack it and put an actual display in there.
That'd be cool.
a functional one.
Color LCD touchscreen. Yeah.
Right. And then what I want you to do is on that little mini Mac, I run something like Bernie to the Rescue and make it an Apple II running an emulation in a tiny little window inside there.
Be awesome. I want you to do more than that. I want you to port OS 10 to the Arduino and house it all in this little thing. And
how about a very miniature iMac aquarium?
You have to have the tiny little fish.
It's just it's for those
little tetra
sea monkeys
or something.
Little sea monkeys.
Yeah, sea monkeys. That'd be perfect. All right, we're moving along. So, Carrington, tell us about your auction pick from last time.
My auction pick last time was an IMSI, wasn't it? Yeah, IMSI 8080. And it sold for over €1,600. Whew.
Wow, yeah, that's pretty good. $2,000. 2,000 American.
2,000 American dollars. why I think, insides are awesome. It's just such an awesome form factor. But what was nice about this one was the outside, except for some stains on the top, was really clean. The front of it was really clean. But the inside was crazy. It looked brand new.
Yeah.
Bonkers what a nice one this was. So if you're looking to pick up one of these, this was the nicest one I'd seen in ages. So I'm not surprised that it sold. It sold for quite a bit, though. So.
Yeah, that's a bit. But I guess they're getting harder and harder to find. All right, so back to the page here. So I was next. Oh, yes, to this little – I wonder who finally got that little mini reproduction Apple II. Yeah, that was a flash drive. That was my pick.
Oh, right. Yeah, that little tiny one.
So it went for $102.51 with 28 bids. So wait, are we surprised by that? That's kind of a lot, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think because it was only one of three that was going to get made, and one went to Woz, one to get – kept by the guy who made them, and then there was this one. So it's fairly collectible. It's a neat sort of item.
Yeah. And I think with the fact that
But so many people have CFFA cards, and this is kind of like the ultimate thing to plug into one of those. So I can see.
We'll see if someone breaks it out at Kansas Fest.
That'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see who purchased it, and hopefully there's somebody who comes. I'd love to see it in real life. Hopefully whoever got it is going
to
come again.
So the RCR bought that. Would you email us?
Yeah, email it to us.
Yes.
If just anyone's talking about it in the chat over here, not yet. So let us know, somebody, if you bought that. So last, Earl, tell us about your pick. So it was the Deck Digital Microvax 2.
Yeah, it sold for $400, it looks like. And that's not a bad price, actually. No. It's not cheap, but not terribly expensive for this nice chassis and the boards that were in there. So I think that was reasonable.
Because it was all working.
Yeah. I'd love to have one of these eventually.
And that's totally, someone bought this as a collector, pretty much, right?
Oh, you wouldn't want to try and run this kind of thing in production, I don't think.
I would.
I think that if you were going to, if you want to, I would go with emulation.
Or provide cloud services with it.
Yeah, exactly.
But you never know. Some people could be running a business on one of these things, and they bought it as their backup.
It could be, although
maybe
if you were going to do that, you might be better off with emulation at this point.
Yeah. All right, so now we're going to move along to this show's choices. And so, Carrington, you go first.
Oh, me first. Okay, so I'm going to Apple again, no surprise, or Apple in general, not again. But this time, something for Macs instead of the Apple II. And it's just something I haven't seen in a while. And you know how I'm all about the space-saving things because I live in a little condo, so I'm all about small emulating devices and dual uses things. And this is a Keytronic dual-use keyboard. So it's
it can work with a Mac Plus. That's really
exactly
surprising.
So what's nice about it, why it's a dual use, it's a keyboard that has on the it looks like the traditional Apple keyboard too. So you got your big keyboard with big keys and the full function keys on the top and that kind of stuff. So it'll fit right in for use on a vintage Mac. But in the back of it has both ADB and the RJ11 ports. So it'll work with the original Macs, the 112, the 512, the Mac Plus, because they had that different port. So this is a keyboard that would work with both. And so, yes, if you're looking for all original parts and you've got the classic computers you're going to want to stick with the official Mac things. But I think as a backup one or as something to dual use or something like that. And also it's the fact that I never knew this existed. I never knew there were keyboards that had multiple ports in the back like this. So it's kind of neat. And it's a vintage system. It's from many, many years ago. It's not like a new thing. And it was made in the U.S. And so I dug it. I think it's expensive to buy it now for $150. I think that's a lot, even for a nice keyboard. But it's a cool device, and I hadn't seen it. So I thought I'd pick that as the shout-out. So that is what I'm selecting. So we'll see if it sells.
It's interesting to note, too, how especially for that time frame. So imagine, the SE in 87 came out with the we're just talking about the MiniDIN 8 connector.
Right,
or whatever.
The ADB stuff, yeah.
Yeah, ADB, I'm sorry, that's what it was. Yeah, the serial's MiniDIN 8. Anyway.
Was the SE the first one with the...
Yeah,
it was after the Plus. Yeah, because I remember my sister and I
got the Macs
for Christmas that year. I think it was Christmas of 87 or whenever it came out. My sister got a Mac Plus and I got the Mac SE. And I remember the time, that's sort of when I learned they had the two different connectors. So.
And sort of SE was also the first Mac with a built-in hard drive.
Yes, mine had the hard drive and hers had the dual floppies.
They changed the ports in the back, the mouse connector too. Anyway, so I was going to say that especially that time frame, to come out with such a absolute PC-like keyboard for a Mac, to me that's real surprising.
Think it's PC-like. This looks like to me, I look at this and it looks like most of the Mac keyboards of that era. Because this probably came out a few years after the SE. This probably came out in 88, 89, something like that. And so this is the shape of the Mac 2's keyboard. This is the Apple desktop keyboard 1 and keyboard 2, just what they look like. So
I'll be right back.
See ya.
You guys keep going.
I'll just talk about this slowly because you're up next, Earl, but okay.
Okay. So I guess I'll go ahead and cover it for – I'll just do mine then.
Think we should do Earl's.
That would make sense.
And disparage it.
My choice –
I think I'm going to pick a new thing for Earl. Earl's picking a dolly. A pretty, pretty dolly.
my choice this year was influenced by
this
me
year?
Watching. yeah, this show was influenced.
Have we gone to a new schedule that I don't know about?
Last night I was watching Pawn Stars, and someone brought one of these in.
I don't know what that is.
It's a show on. I think it's either History Channel or A&E. I get them confused. But it's sort of Antiques Roadshow for regular people, I guess, because it's a pawn shop that's in Las Vegas and people bring stuff in. But it definitely leans more to very historical collectible items. And you know, they talk about like its history. It's a very good show. I really like it a lot. So in any case, someone brought one of these in and the store ended up buying it. And so I thought it was kind of interesting. So I looked on eBay and they've got a ton of them. This one happens to be one of the better deals. It's $40. Buy it now. $9 shipping.
And
what
it's
all complete and works. So it's basically like, looks like a little, like those type of pocket computers, calculators that came out in the late 70s, like Radio Shack had and Casio and such. But you enter all the information about the horses at the horse race, and then it'll calculate your best odds.
Oh my God, you're right. So it's a 1979 Mattel Electronics Thoroughbred Horse Race Analyzer handheld
yeah.
computer.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I thought it was pretty interesting.
Now, you make $1 million with that.
A game company making a gambling device. Thanks, that's Mattel. Johnny crazy. Loves it.
So you take this to the horse races?
I think you do it beforehand because, you know, back in the day, they posted all in the newspaper.
Well, they post them when you go to the...
Yeah, there too.
When you go to the track. Once a year, my family and I, that's what we do for Father's Day. It's been a Father's Day
really?
Tradition since I was a kid. My dad passed away like 10 years ago, but still for Father's Day, my entire family gets together and we go to the track. It's the strangest tradition. And I go and, you know, lose $20 because it makes me bet $1 a race.
And horse racing.
So maybe I could pick up one of these things and I could bring it and I would then, you know, it's going to pay for itself. That's $40. That's an investment.
But you got to wonder, why would anyone sell this? Why would you ever sell it?
Because they made so much money at the horse race. They feel guilty. They got to pay it forward.
And you're talking about horse racing, right, Carrington? What you and your family go to?
Yeah. Well, no, the dog track. Yeah, horse racing.
No, it's funny because where I'm from, that's all there is dog tracks.
Oh, that is
dog racing. Track.
Yeah. Dog races are so scammy. But okay.
Greyhound yeah. racing. So, Earl, you take it on your item now. We jump to me, so you've got Adam.
I want to buy your item.
Apologies to our audio listeners, but in Carrington's defense, I just wanted to show you, David.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. It is the same, huh?
Yep.
Oh, talk some more so we see it. Okay.
Yeah. This is an actual Macintosh, like one of the ones that came out with the Mac 2, the extended keyboard, and it looks very similar to that auction item that Carrington
had. You're right. I have one, too. So it's just a Keytronic version.
Yeah,
looks
you're
so
right.
PC-like.
He really means me.
It's true.
You're so right, Earl.
Thank you.
All right. So go on to the Coleco Atom.
All right. So this is a Coleco Atom, and it is in really good shape, and it's very complete. It's got lots of the stuff. And, you know, typically when you see them on eBay, you don't see them as nice as this with all the pieces. And one of the things that I love about this seller is that they actually took the stuff out and plugged it in to make sure that it works. And one of the pieces had even broken, the keyboard cable, I guess, was kind of disintegrated due to age. And so the seller ordered a replacement and connected it up.
Wow.
So, yeah, this thing's got the 64K memory expander, the printer.
Wow, it has tons of stuff. Users
and
club stuff and cassettes and games.
It's got a lot.
Well, this is a really complete one.
Yeah, and I thought for that complete that the starting bid of $125 with $40 shipping was not bad at all.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's a nice shape. Wow, this is a really nice unit. This is nicer than I've seen on eBay in ages.
And I was looking, I noticed in the description they're using the term ColecoVision, Coleco Atom, home computer. I'm sure they're just doing that to make sure people find it. But, you know, this is a Coleco Atom, which is also a ColecoVision. But, you know, you could have, at the time, and I think they're much more rare, you could buy it, you could have bought a ColecoVision, and then you could have made it into an Atom.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think so.
That's correct.
But, you know, one thing that's interesting about these is the power comes from the printer. Did you guys know that?
No.
You have to have the printer connected to the Coleco Atom. It gives the power to the main
unit. That's the secret of its power. Yeah. We can now defeat it.
Well, it is letter quality, so I guess there you go.
But yeah, this is a real nice full set. I mean,
Is it really letter quality or is it just near letter quality?
It's daisy wheel.
I think it's a daisy wheel.
Oh, it's a daisy wheel? I love daisy wheels.
I used to have one. I had a Coleco Atom for a while.
Oh, it is. Yeah, looking at the text, that's definitely not dot matrix. Nice. That's the best type. I love the sound of the impact of daisy wheels and the ball. What was the ball called in the IBM one?
Oh, like the Selectric.
Selectric,
yeah.
I don't know what you call the actual mechanism. Like, so it's not a daisy wheel. Oh. It's not a daisy ball. It's a ball of some sort. Anyway, somebody probably knows in the chat room, so that ball thing. Oh, speaking of the chat room, before we move on from the auctions, somebody said this, that they're pointing out that the keyboard that I had selected looks nice, but that guy, that auction seller, is sort of notorious for vastly overcharging, like asking a lot for stuff. So I guess that explains why. And it did seem pricey to me, so I thought it was a neat item, but I guess that guy has a bit of a rep. So
I don't know if we
having
mentioned
an MTAR.
$150.
Yeah, it's a lot for a keyboard.
You can have this Atom system cheaper. And this is great. This is the type of thing where you could buy this, and this arrives, and hopefully in good shape. And guy's got 99% positive feedback, 751 or woman. But you get the whole experience of the whole setup.
It's a whole Atom collection in a sense.
Paperwork.
I agree. That's a great choice, Earl. That's a really nice looking system.
So in deference to you guys, actually the more, Apple-oriented legs of the podcast here, I had to do two picks this time because this other thing was just is too cool.
Oh,
somebody
this
had
thing.
Taken a Mac Mini and stuck it in a Apple II Disk II enclosure.
And this has been in the news, I think, on Cult of Mac and some other stuff.
It was in the news ages ago, a few years ago, when it first got done. It made the rounds.
Right.
It was in Gizmodo and Macworld and all. Oh, yeah, he says that in his listing, as seen on Macworld and Gizmodo.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a while ago. But the problem is now I think he's got a $1,000 buy it now. And so I don't know.
But it starts with $100, though.
Yeah, but with a reserve. God knows what his reserve is.
$999. Well, if I were him, I wouldn't let it go too cheap.
But it's a really old. The problem is now it's an old
Mac Mini. Right?
Yeah.
It's probably one of the first Mac
Mini. And old computers suck. Who wants an old computer?
Well, I got to get these things out of here.
Yeah, it's a core Solo. So circa 2006. So
I do think though it's totally awesome. Because you've got a traditional disk queue enclosure and it flips up the front and that's where you put the CDs in for the Mac Mini. So I mean it's a great computer and it's really well done.
Yeah. It is. It's really well done. It's really nice. I guess, if you wanted to complain about it, I mean it would still make a decent media center Mac Mini, but arguably it'd be better to have. Well, actually, you can't buy a Mac Mini with a Blu-ray player, right? But it'd be better if it had a Blu-ray player and if it was a more modern computer in there.
The new Mac Minis, I think, have a slightly larger form factor, so the current ones wouldn't fit in a Disk II. Didn't they go to that wider form factor a few years
flatter,
ago? So,
and, yeah.
Unfortunately, so it wouldn't fit in. So this is sort of the you have to get an older model to fit in the Disk II, and which is such a great look. Like I would prefer this over a current Mac Mini, though the current Mac Minis are much more powerful systems for media centers, that kind of stuff. So.
That's very
conversation
cool.
piece.
Definitely.
You're right, though, Carrington. I don't know what the reserve is. Starting bid is $100, but, it says reserve not met, but on the other hand, there are no bids.
Right.
So we don't even know if $100 or $150 or whatever is the reserve.
The only way to know, Earl, is you start bidding. Bid, Earl, bid. Go, Earl.
All right, we'll have a little bidding war between the two of us.
No, just you.
Me personally, I would have done it with taken offers. So have a starting bid, have a buy it now, and then also accept offers, and then you can kind of gauge. People can send you offers. I don't know. There's always different strategies. So are we done already? Is that it?
I don't know. You're the host.
Talking to?
We still got around the table.
Nah, I'm canceling that this time.
All right. I got news.
You are a wet blanket.
So that's it, everybody.
Go away.
No, I promised somebody in the chat room that I would talk about the MAME machine behind me.
Yeah, I wanted to tell you that. So go ahead, Carrington. You've got a big announcement. And talk about the MAME machine.
Oh, yeah, I guess because the announcement sort of relates to the main machine. So the main machine I have behind me is my my personal little main box. It's a tabletop main computer, though it does run off a computer. I've built two main standalone main systems. This is the second one that I got as a mostly completed kit. Somebody else had it, and I think it was built by somebody else, but then kind of got wrecked, and then I had to rebuild it. So this one runs off an Xbox. So inside it is an Xbox, and I just hacked open the controller. It's just running CoinX, which is a Xbox MAME emulator, and it's just got tons of, you know, 300 or 400 games on it in ROMs, all of which are legal, I swear, and I wrote them on myself. And so it's the downside of this one, this little tabletop one, is it's a single player, so it's got the one joystick and set of buttons and the one player button and coin button and that kind of stuff. And then just the inside, I've just wired those buttons up to a hacked apart Xbox controller. And then what's nice about this system, though, is it's using an actual 15 kilohertz arcade monitor. So I took the video out from the Xbox and split it, and I'm running through. I didn't make anything special. I just took a VGA to arcade monitor, a little adapter, and run it through that. So it's what I like is the graphics, therefore, look a little more exactly like they would look like on an actual arcade. So it's fun, the good feel on the buttons, that kind of stuff. I think my next project will be I want to build a full two player stand up one. So I think that's gonna be my next main project. But I love this little box. It takes up very little space, and really easy to load new games on. So play it a lot. Absolutely adore it.
Love it.
So hooray for main stuff. Oh, yes, and sorry, and news. Yeah,
there's a great backdrop, too.
It does, I guess, because right now it's just playing. It's just showing it runs through the menu of various games. So speaking of classic arcade games, which I enjoy very much, I have a new podcast which launches as of tomorrow officially, but it's technically live right now. You can head over to monsterfeet.com and see it. It's called No Quarter. It's a weekly podcast, and I have a co-host, a bit of a surprising co-host. It's Mike McGinnis from the Open Apple podcast. So he and I, competitors in one sense, have joined forces. The podcast was actually his idea, so I'm sort of along for the ride in this one. He emailed me asking
if I liked... You didn't ask
me? Well, nobody likes to podcast with you, David. Earl and I are here by court order. So, Mike just was asking me if I'm interested, because I'm a vintage gamer. He wants to know, do I like classic arcade games? Do I play them on MAME? That kind of stuff. I'm like, well, I have a MAME machine I built. I love MAME stuff. And so we're just sort of playing and reviewing classic games. It's a short show. This first one's a little long, 40 minutes or so, but the goal is to keep it under half an hour. Comes out every week. It'll come out every Monday. So technically it launches tomorrow. It's been submitted to iTunes, but it's just not out yet. Our first show is about Pac-Man. And so you can listen now. So it's called No Quarter, and it's Mike McGinnis and me, and just sort of reviewing and talking about classic arcade games. So really want to welcome feedback in that and see how we can sort of cater to an audience and see what people would like. And in that first game, in the first show talking about Pac-Man, his high score was vastly higher than mine. So far I'm losing.
How awesome, Carrington.
Yeah,
and
very, very fun.
What an exciting lineup with you and Mike. I can't wait to listen to that.
Yeah, it was fun. He's really, really good guy, as you know from his own podcast, like really, really funny fellow. So we get along well. I always liked him at Kansas Fest. So, and we have sort of different personalities, but I think very complimentary, and he's got a great amount of knowledge when it comes to this kind of stuff. And I can come along for the ride as comic relief, essentially. So,
very cool.
But fun. Yeah, I love the subject, and I'm excited that it's doing this the last couple of weeks, it came together really fast. It was about a week ago that Mike first emailed me and came up with the name. We recorded the show. We wanted to come up with a system. If we're going to do it every week, it's got to be something we can knock out. And so bingo, first show's up and got the graphics done. It's over on Monster Feet. So it'll be hosted on the Monster Feet network, which is the little podcasting network that I run. And the point of Monster Feet is it's all public domain podcasts. So unlike RCR, which is under Creative Commons, as is Open Apple, the Monster Feet stuff is all about, anybody can do anything you want with it. You can remix it, you can sample it, you can do whatever you want. I'm a big proponent of public domain stuff, so that's what I try to do with Monster Feet is create content that anybody can do with as they please. So, and if you go on the Monster Feet site, you can sort of see the previews of the next two shows that we'll be launching, one in November and one in January. So you can sort of see a hint. And those are both one's a video show and one's an audio show. So you can see what's coming up in Carrington Land.
Excellent. I forgot what I was going to ask you. I was listening. Oh, yeah, what were some other names? I'm always curious. What were some of the names you guys
thought name of? That I came up with first, like, we just, again, threw it out. So I came up with a list of names, sent them to Mike. Mike said he liked No Quarter. I said, awesome, it's No Quarter. One of the names that I came up with that I kind of liked, well, I was going to call it Dr. Strange Button, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the ROM, which I thought would be a really fun podcast name, but it's kind of long. So instead of Dr. Strange Button, kinda we're going
abstract.
With No Quarter. Yes, so we're going to go with No Quarter. Because that's the whole point, is we're exploring classic arcade games, but in a MAME sense. So the whole idea is there's no quarters involved. And we're going to be doing battle, so we're not giving quarter. So is what my idea. All this was
No Quarter?
No, I mean, it was on my list, because I had come up with a list of names. But Mike really selected it. And, well, then it was my idea.
All right.
So we'll take it away. Go ahead, Kerry.
No, that's it. So I'm delighted to announce the show. The next show of 1 MHz has just been uploaded as well, but I see from the site it's not live. But show number 17 will be live by the time anybody can hear this, because I'm just waiting for it to go through the CMS system. So that's about Castle Wolfenstein. So I'm giving away a copy of that as well. So if you listen to show 17 of 1 MHz, you can win yourself a copy of Castle Wolfenstein for the Apple II.
I was trying to see if I could come up with a preview sound for it.
That
for 1
would
megahertz.
Be awesome. Now,
crinkling,
being part of
the RCR
doesn't make me ineligible for 1 MHz, right? Because I'm Castle Wolfenstein.
You may win Castle. Yeah, so it's the big box Muse version for Apple II of Castle Wolfenstein. So,
I'm getting in on that contest.
It's over there. Otherwise, I could hold it up for everybody. So,
Earl, what
about
you?
Contests. We got to remember, we're going to be giving away. I've got to hear Star Raiders. We talked about this like 2 shows ago. I've got Star Raiders sealed, new in box for Atari 400 and 800. We have to give this away. So there's a new page on rcrpodcast.com. If you head over there, we have a contest page. So go to rcrpodcast.com. You can click on contest in the menu. And there's a little form you can fill out, and you have to give the secret word. And if you put the secret word in, you can win yourself this new inbox. It's available to anyone in the world. My 1 MHz sponsor has agreed to do the shipping, so Navis will ship it off for us. We just have to come up with a secret word. So what should the secret word be?
You want us to choose?
Yes. David, I want you to choose. You're the host. Come up with a name. Come up with a word.
I choose?
Yes.
How about retro compute?
Perfect. Retro compute. Okay, guys, so you can head
that's
over
appropriate,
to
right?
rcrpodcast.com, and you'll be able to just click on the contest page, or just go to rcrpodcast.com/contest, and you'll see that it just asks for name, email address, and the secret word. And so the secret word will be retro compute. All one word, put that in, and then there's a little field if you want to give us some feedback on how we can improve the show, but you don't have to. It's host on Squarespace, which means we have to have something put in every field, unfortunately. It doesn't let you have optional fields, but just put none or nothing or whatever in a field that you if you want to leave it blank. So.
And I did do a test on it, Carrington, if you want to check it right after the show.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'll see if I...
make sure it works, I guess.
Perfect.
So, Earl, you got anything to report?
Well, my retro stuff has been taking a little bit of a hit because I'm enrolled in another one of these online classes through Coursera. This one's on compilers. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because the last time I took compilers was like, I don't know, 25 years ago for my degree. Yeah. So I'm having to wake up some old brain cells and learn some new stuff, which is fun. And the instructor, great guy, and was probably playing with G.I. Joes the last time that I took compilers. So that was a little depressing. But interesting, though, that it had a retro tie-in because as part of the class, the programming assignment, you make a compiler. You make the pieces of a compiler. And the code it compiles to is for a MIPS processor. And you have to use a simulator for the MIPS. And one of the things they said in the class is, now we realize that you guys probably aren't going to have a machine that will run real MIPS code, so we give you this simulator. And I'm thinking, I'm scratching my head going, now wait a minute, I do. I have an SGI Indigo that has a MIPS processor, so I could probably actually run it. But it's just interesting that they're using a...
I wonder why.
The 90s. Well, I think probably to keep things simple, it would be my guess. Is just, and if I recall correctly, the MIPS actually has a nice instruction set and is well laid out, kind of like, you know, other chips that are well respected, like the 68000, that kind of thing. So that may be why they use that as the ultimate output code. I'm not sure. I'll probably know more as I get further along in the class. But it's really interesting so far. I'm hoping when I come out of this that maybe I can even tweak a little bit of this knowledge to either contribute to or work on some compiler technology for the old retro computers, maybe even for the PDP, just for fun. So that's what's going on with me.
Okay, and so I'm going to get over to chat. I think, don't we have Rex is in the chat room, right? Rex Allison, you guys?
Rex is in the house.
Rex, you in the house? I thought I saw his name up here. So we have one of our listeners, our fans, Rex. He visited the Halted Specialties. You remember you sent me this link, Earl? Yes. Or Carrington, did you?
No, Earl sent it, but I remember it.
We all got it. I mean, so, but basically he was in, I guess, San Francisco area, even at the Halted Specialties company, and he did like an audio report, and then he took some pictures, and so I just wanted to mention real quick that, you know, I got that, Rex, and so I'm going to work on that to get it. So check our YouTube channel also, and I'm going to put that up there soon.
Fantastic.
So it's very interesting, because he walks around and describes what he's seeing there mm-hmm. and different stuff. Go ahead, Earl.
Nice. Well, the other thing I wanted to add is we got some email from one of our listeners, from Phil,
okay.
And it's short, and you know, we don't often do this, but it has a piece of interesting information based on one of our previous shows, so you guys mind if I read it real quick?
It's
really quick. He says, "Hey guys, curious you should have mentioned Conrad Zuse, the adder in both Harry Potter's relay computer and the RC3. Remember we talked about the relay computer stuff? Was
right.
designed by Zuse for the German Z3, completed in 1941. It is an extremely elegant design, using only two relays per bit position. Unlike typical addition circuits, it has no delay for digit carries to ripple through it. The output, including the state of the carry bit, is available as soon as the inputs are presented." And he had a little errata for us here. One minor correction to your number 35 podcast. Museum of Computer Culture is a completely new organization, separate from the Goodwill Computer Museum, which still exists and still has RC3. So just wanted to mention that those things are separate entities. Was it you who talked about that, David?
Yes, right.
And he says, thanks for your mention and your kind words.
Okay. So before we sign off here, so I have one thing to report on. I did I got interviewed, and I'm pretty excited about that. It was by Adam Rosen. Remember, we interviewed him recently. Mm-hmm. So he interviewed me at Cult of Mac, and there's a link in the show notes. It's called Remembering Our Digital Past with Computer Historian David Grealish. So I was real pleased about that. I think it's a real good interview. Of course, a lot of the writing is me, because I'm answering the
but you think it's great.
I think I did a great job.
So is that writing or is that an audio interview, David? I haven't gone to that yet.
It's written. So this is a written interview. So
it is actually a really good interview. I sent you a direct message that I really like.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you. So so please check that out. I would be honored if you would do so. So in any case, that's going to be a wrap for this show 36, and our next show is in 2 weeks on October 28th. Please help us by spreading the word in forums and through tweeting. Review the show on iTunes. You can go to rcrpodcast.com for discuss links and show notes. Carrington's holding up the box of Star Raiders. Don't forget to go to our website and enter the contest. It's free. You can win. It's
right.
Cool. Oh, and record opening it. Carrington? No. Whoever wins it, they should record themselves opening it for you then to play.
I know, because I love the sound of software being opened.
You can email the show and send audio. Please send audio feedback. You know, we're a podcast, and play around. It's fun. Just record something 30 seconds a minute. You know, instead of writing it, say it to us and send it to feedback@rcrpodcast.com.
Because David can't read, and so it puts him at a disadvantage.
And you can follow us on Twitter @rcrpodcast. So until next time, retro computes.
Ooh, that's the secret word.